You're a sweetheart, that's great.
But what about those two jerks?
Those two jerks are taking up 100% of my time from now on, so just have
patience, my friend. I'm just getting things rolling. When I'm finished with that kid, he'll be begging me to be his teacher. And you know what he's gonna learn from me? Pain in every part of his body and fear in every part of his mind. And here's the kicker. He's gonna thank me for it.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Richard.
And I'm Rima.
This is House Podcastica Cobra Kai Edition.
And this week we're covering The Karate Kid Part 3.
The masterpiece.
Yeah. The best of the best.
I was so wrong. I didn't realize how amazing this movie is.
I couldn't take my eyes off it. It was like watching a train wreck, man. Yeah.
As soon as it was over, I just started it back up again.
Morbid curiosity.
So it's our top three highlights for The Karate Kid Part 3. I had only seen this maybe twice, maybe only once. And I remember being really heartbroken because Karate Kid was one of my favorite movies, as you guys all know by now. And I was really curious to go back and watch it again to see if my thoughts and feelings had changed at all. And they did, kind of. They did in some ways. So it'd be interesting to talk about it. But what did you guys think in general going back and forth? Did you watch it again, Rich? I know you saw it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I did. I went back to pick up some notes. And then, you know what? I watched the whole damn thing. Beginning to end. I didn't plan to. I didn't even want to. But like I said, it's like watching a train wreck. I couldn't stop.
I had Nico watch it with me, and he's like, he's not learning Miyagi's lessons. He's just mad.
Yeah.
I'm like, very good. And then he said, yeah, this is my least favorite of the three. And I was like, I'm so proud of you, son.
Smart smart boy.
Yeah, this film was nominated for 5 Razzies, but it was also released the same year Star Trek V came out, and Star Trek V won 3 of those Razzies. So I think if it wasn't for Star Trek V, this movie probably would have won some Razzies. Yeah,
that's some pretty stiff competition there.
Right, yeah. William Shatner won a Razzie for Worst Actor, not Daniel.
Oh, wow.
That's the thing with those Razzies is, you know, your acting can be the same from movie to movie, but if you're in a really shitty movie, you might win a Razzie for worst acting, even if you're the same.
Right. I have seen some good actors or actresses nominated, and they've been in some great roles and done very well in acting, but this happened to be one thing that either wasn't well written, maybe they weren't on their game or something. I'm sure many reasons, but yeah.
I think Halle Berry won for Catwoman, and she also won Best Actress for some other movie, I think.
Monster. Yeah. Monster's Ball with Billy Bob Thornton. Yep.
Halle Berry?
Worse than Bess, huh?
Yeah, you're right, yeah. Yeah. Is that where they had that sex scene where it really seemed like they were just having sex?
Yes.
That is intense.
What movie is this?
It's Monsters Ball. It's hey, don't watch it if you're having a bad day. It's not a pick me up.
I've never seen it, actually.
Oh, okay.
I've only seen that one scene.
Of course. Yeah.
I was pretty floored. Yeah. Anyway, we're getting way off topic. So, Rima, what did you think?
Oh, wow. So, you know, all through Cobra Kai, as we've been covering, and you guys would talk about, you know, because there's so many references to all three movies throughout Cobra Kai, and you guys would talk about Karate Kid 3, and I would rack my brain sitting here all the time going, have I watched that? I don't remember watching it. And you guys would talk about different scenes and the characters, and I thought, man, I don't remember that at all. Has it really been that long? Realize this was my first watch.
Nice.
Never saw it before, and I don't know if I'm proud or embarrassed of that, but...
I think
this
proud.
Was my first so this was my first watch, and this was probably had all of the ingredients of every horrible 80s movie I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and there were some bad ones out there. So, I mean, there were some good parts there. You know, I don't want to completely trash it or anything, but it was just, like Rich said, a train wreck. I was right there on that train with you. I couldn't stop watching. So,
I mean,
I know he kept looking for something good to say, but it was like, oh, they just destroyed it.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah. I mean, for me, a lot of what colors my view of it is that I think Karate Kid is such a great movie. I mean, I feel like it's pretty near damn perfect. I mean, if you go back and listen to our podcast, you can definitely hear some nitpicks, but I was just totally captivated by every scene. And I was, you know, the music was great. And I very much identified with Daniel and fell in love with Allie and everything. And just so, so good. And to have this come out, and it's from the same writer, Robert Mark Kamen, same director, John G. Avildsen, who also directed Rocky. But that first movie is like magic to me, and this one just breaks my heart. But I have to say, I do, watching it again after all this time, I did find some magic in it too. There were some parts that got me, and I also found it much more enjoyable to watch because I was expecting it to be so bad and not like had all my hopes that it would at least be as good as Karate Kid 2. You know, that's when right. I really just, movies really let me down when I have my expectations up, and I did not at all. So I have thought it was really fun to watch, and you know, there are some movies that I'm just like, God, when is this going to be over? And I did not feel like that with this movie. I was like, oh, this is so awful, but it's really fun. So that's how I felt.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't great, but I wasn't wishing that it was over. It wasn't painful to watch.
Yeah.
I've watched movies that are just, oh my gosh, this is excruciating. When is it going to be over? I didn't quite feel like that. It was bad, but I couldn't stop watching. And I was glad to have seen lots of things in this movie that are referenced in Cobra Kai. So a lot more things make sense to
right.
me now.
Yes. We needed to watch it for the podcast. Yeah,
absolutely. It's research, right? And that's sometimes research isn't fun. But I'm glad I watched it, because at least for that, I understand how the references, I understand now and have a better understanding of, you know, where Daniel's at today in Cobra Kai.
Right. He was a total hothead in this movie. And a lot of the references back to that from the series make more sense now.
Right.
You know, the whole kata.
Yes,
and he told his daughter, I was in Cobra Kai for a little while. And she's like, you never told me. And he's like, well, I'm not proud of it. And different references like that make more sense now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But, I'm grateful for that.
You know, I think the big thing about this movie is they wanted to put another one out to make more money, to milk that cow. And it was, the writer was not ready for it, and they just paid him a shit ton of money, and it was rushed, and I don't know if it was rushed, but it was just not, there was no creative impetus for it. It was all about the money, and it was lazy, and it felt like fan fiction to me, you know, it felt like fan fiction. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I did find some magic in it. So for the people who liked it and are like, you guys are assholes, I have a whole section on what I liked about it. So there is some good in there.
Coming up. Yeah, I like some stuff too. I was going to say too, it does feel kind of like they just phoned it in, huh?
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
Yes.
There was no excitement behind the movie, you know, there was no warmth. It was just kind of like, I showed up, said my lines, went home.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that. I mean, look at Terry Silver. Mm. He is fucking stoked to be in this movie. And also the bad guy, Mike Barnes. I don't think it was phoned in. I just think it was a bad story. Maybe Daniel phoned in a little bit, but I think he did all right. And
I can say something about that later, but I think Barnes, the guy who played Barnes, no, is it Barnes?
Mike Barnes, the kid.
Yeah, Barnes.
Yeah, Sean Kane.
I thought he was probably the best performance in the whole movie, honestly.
I could see that.
From an actor's perspective.
That kid.
Out of all of them.
I forgot his name, but he watched the first
Sean
two
Kanan.
Movies.
He played AJ Quartermain in General Hospital.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you remember?
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah.
So he was an a-hole on there, too.
He was.
He watched both the movies, Karate Kid 1 and 2, 10 times each, and was a huge fan. And when he went into audition, he just got right up in Ralph Macchio's face and wouldn't back down because he wanted to make an impression on him. And I guess it worked.
Nice. Right.
All right. How about top three? Who wants to go first? Rich?
I'll go first.
Yeah.
Top three highlights. And this is a good one. This was something I thought I liked about the movie. I thought it started out really well. Maybe the first 5 minutes for maybe 10 minutes. But I thought it started out. You had the recap, you know, of the first couple of movies. And then, it starts with Kreese walking sadly down the sidewalk. And he learned that he's losing his business. And I'm like, I almost felt sorry for him until he started rubbing his knuckles, you know, like he's thinking, that damn Miyagi. Then I remembered he was a jerk and I didn't feel sorry for him anymore. But then we find out that Terry owes Kreese for saving his life in Nam, and he has like this super fierce devotion to Kreese, and he's like, I'm going to drop everything and avenge you, my friend, you know? And
I'm
like,
I'm going to take 2 weeks off all my businesses and devote 100% of my time to getting revenge on this kid.
I mean, it's stupid, but it's like in the story, you know, you're like, all right. It's like reading the beginning pages of a comic book, you know?
It's like, it's lucky that Kreese has this billionaire ninja buddy.
No kidding. No, yeah.
What are the odds, huh? But then Miyagi and Daniel arrive back. That was a cool shot. Kreese was leaving for Tahiti, and then Daniel and Miyagi were walking the opposite direction coming from the airport, and then poor Miyagi finds out he's out of a job.
Yeah.
And then they call Daniel's mom. She lets him stay in California. You know, things were moving at a pretty good pace at this point. I'm like, hey, this is pretty good setup. I like this. This could be a good movie. And then, but then we find out that Kumiko and Yuki didn't come back with them. And that was when it pretty much all went downhill for me. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it's not going to be about them.
I think that whole thing that you just described, when I was watching this, it was just red flag after red flag. I was just like, wait, he has a billionaire friend who's going to help him take revenge. And look at Daniel. How come somehow on the flight home, he got pudgy?
Yeah. What happened?
Yeah. There's a lot of little things like that.
Looks
but
so
I thought
different.
The setup was good. I enjoyed the setup. Yeah. And then they just kind of like, we're like, eh, they didn't do it well.
The thing about Kreese being down and out, I feel like Johnny mirrors that later on in Cobra Kai, probably.
Yeah.
They probably totally took inspiration from what happened with Kreese.
For sure.
How much Kreese hates Miyagi and Daniel. God, he's had a thing against them for years. 35 years now.
I know.
Why?
Let that
why?
Shit go, man.
He preoccupied so much with these two people.
Because they got to make those movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the you know, reboot with Cobra Kai.
Right.
So, got it.
I mean, in
keep it going.
In the first movie, Kreese is this ex-military guy who's a hard ass and just wants to drill it into his students because that's the way he thinks he needs to teach, you know? And it was kind of over the top, but you could sort of see a guy who got back from Nam and didn't know what to do with his life, so he decided to open up karate school, and he just, you know, was a wounded kind of a guy, and that's how he ended up teaching. You could sort of accept that. But then when he loses a tournament and then he beats his students up in the parking lot, that's kind of over the top. And then in 3, when he decides to devote his life to taking revenge on these guys, or at least have his friend do it, that's when it just becomes a whole different thing, you know, just totally cheesy. And I could appreciate it on that level, but it's not the same for me. It's not grounded anymore. It's just ridiculous.
He's got issues. Did Ralph Macchio look older to you guys?
Older?
I couldn't decide. Yeah, older. I was like, I thought he looked maybe a little bit older, but not much. I mean, this is like
he just doesn't
5
age.
Years later, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in movie time, it was
hard
1 year
to say,
later.
Because he definitely looked pudgier, and that was really distracting to me. And man, I don't want to seem like a fat shamer, but it just, he's supposed to be this hero and who knows karate. And I don't know. This movie starts right after the second one. So I found it distracting.
I did too. And he didn't look like he didn't look like he was pudgy. It was just in his face. I don't know if he was just going through this growth thing and, you know, he's still kind of young. And so he was 20 or something?
He had a belly too, but he was
kid.
Wearing all these baggy clothes.
He was 27.
In the first one?
Oh, no, not in the first one. He was 27 in this one.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he was just going through a stage or something. And maybe they hit it well with his clothes. I didn't really think he looked... I mean, he was a little scrawnier, I think, in the first one and then in the second one. But I don't know. It was a little distracting for me, too. And, I mean, I don't want to... I mean, people go through things, you know, changes and stuff. But, yeah, it was a little distracting. Especially seeing as how they were coming right off of you know, part two.
Right, yeah. He was also a lot more bouncy in this one.
Mm.
He's bouncing around all the time on his toes. That annoyed me after a while. Like every time you saw him walk, he's bouncing around. Like, walk normal, dude.
Yes.
What's your number three?
Well, Terry Silver. I'm just going to start with him because I just thought, and Rich, you mentioned it too, like this dude has this undying loyalty to Kreese. And I mean, I guess it's nice to be grateful to someone who, you know, you went to war with. And I know that those situations really bond people. Those are strong bonds. The people that you go to war with and, you know, the things that you go through and the things that you see. My uncle was in Vietnam. So I, you know, I've heard stories and I feel like I can, you know, kind of understand.
And he said he saved him countless times, too. So that it was a particular kind of relationship where apparently Kreese saved Terry Silver's life many times.
Yeah.
Yes. And while I think he was trying to do something good for his friend and help, you know, get revenge on LaRusso and Miyagi for... You know, well, how dare they win a tournament? And you know, I mean, or you know, defend Johnny against Kreese. Exactly. So I mean, this horrible offense.
What if one of the other Cobra Kai won?
Of course, must have. Well, I mean, that's so bizarre to me. It just, I thought, wow, this dude is this whole thing is so over the top. Like he's sending Kreese to Tahiti. You know, on a beach getting some massages by some beautiful girls, and he's gonna like just leave his businesses for a couple weeks and go, you know, start back up Cobra Kai. At least that's where he's telling, you know, everyone. And he has got to be the worst 80s villain I've ever seen. So obnoxious and way over the top. And I mean, I grew up in the 80s, seen a lot of 80s movies, still watch a lot of 80s movies, you know, go back and watch some of my favorites. This dude tops them all, and that's saying something.
Yeah,
that's hilarious.
I mean, totally. That slick back ponytail, the earring, and you know, he had it all. And I mean, the way he just got so obnoxious. I'm just like, how old are you? You know, who acts like this? It was just.
He was almost the same age as Ralph Macchio. He was either 27 or 28. But when you look at him, yeah, when you look at him together on screen, it's like, he looks like a man. Ralph looks like a little kid.
Yeah. Ralph is 4 months older.
That's interesting.
Because, he's 4 months older. Holy cow.
Holy cow. And so this guy's supposed to be like the same age as Kreese.
Yeah.
Because they were
he was born in 62, which would, the actor, which would make him 13 when the Vietnam War ended.
Oh, goodness.
Thomas Ian Griffith.
I guess we'll just overlook that.
Thomas Ian Griffith.
Right.
Yeah, he really hammed it up, especially his stupid laugh. You know what it feels like? It feels like he was just messing around, overacting, and the director was like, great, print, whatever.
Yeah.
Like in Ed Wood.
We're done. We good. We're good. We got our shot. Let's go to lunch.
No, I can try it another way. No, it's fine.
Right, yeah. No, that's good. That worked.
What do we got for lunch?
Yeah, I'm curious to hear what the direction was, you know.
I think I read that he did one line like that and the director liked it, so they figured out ways to incorporate more of that throughout the movie.
I guess.
I need your laugh to be more maniacal. More cowbell.
Can't ever have too much cowbell. But it was just, and I thought that I'd heard you guys mention before when we were talking about the movies and stuff, how all three were by the same writer and director. And I'm just sitting here watching it going, I know they told me that this was the same writer and director. I was like, who, what happened here? What, you know, what happened here? What fell apart? What went wrong? You know, you guys put out two pretty good first movies, even the sequel, you know, was better. But anyway, sorry, I'm kind of ranting a little bit, but that's my number three is Terry Silver's in general. I've never seen an 80s guy like him before, and I probably never will again.
Yeah, he was pretty over the top.
Yeah.
So yeah. Do you want my what I liked or what I didn't like first?
What you didn't like. You
know, what I didn't like.
Yeah, like Rich said, I think the last time, let's end it on a positive note. So let's get all the bad stuff out of the way.
All right. So Daniel was, it's a story about Daniel losing his way. So that's a reasonable story to have. And then he finds inner strength at the end. And he, you know, at least the idea is that he does the right thing and he appeals to his better angels. But during the story, he's, you know, kind of fallen off. And the themes of Karate Kid are always about the importance of a good teacher. And he goes with the bad teacher here. So it's understandable that he's going to be kind of falling apart through the movie. But it was annoying to watch. I mean, he's stubborn. He's mean. I didn't like that he was pudgy. And also he's kind of weak. I mean, he just gets his ass kicked through the whole movie pretty much. He beats up one guy, Dennis, and then he gets one punch in at the end that's kind of unexciting. And that's it. And the damn tournament, right. I mean, they made up those dumb rules where he only has to fight at the end, which I think they did because they just didn't want to show him having to work his way up because that would be a total repeat. But also that if the other guy does an illegal move, then they take 1 point away. Really, I think. And then they told him, you know, if you do one more illegal move, you're going to be disqualified. And then the next time Mike Barnes gets a point in, he's kicking him in the face like 3 or 4 times. And it's like, wasn't that an illegal move? You know, right after the ref said one more illegal move, you're going to be disqualified. Then Terry pulls Daniel and he goes, now the real pain begins. It's like, I thought he was just going to be disqualified if he did that. Anyway, so the effect of this new rule and Daniel not having to fight is we just see him totally getting his ass kicked throughout the whole tournament. And then he does his kata, which is like, I don't know. It just looked silly. And then he gets one punch in and it was just so anticlimactic.
Yeah, I agree. I had that down the same way. Plus, I didn't understand that either. So Daniel only had to get 1 point to win the whole damn tournament?
Well, what happened was you needed to get 3 points, but they had a time limit. And once the time limit was reached, then you go into sudden death. And so then it's only 1 point.
Because I think that was 0-0.
Terry's plan for Mike Barnes is keep getting a point and then getting a point taken away with an illegal punch just to keep him in as much pain as possible. And then during sudden death, you get the point and win. So Daniel just, to win the whole tournament, he just had to get one little sissy punch in.
That was a dumb plan.
So I don't know. It wasn't very, like the damn first movie where he had to fight his way to the top and then get that badass kick to the face was so much more impactful, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because even whenever he was in the first one, when he was, you know, fighting with Johnny in that last tournament, or in the last round, sorry, of the tournament, the championship round, you know, he was still kind of getting his butt kicked, you know, and Johnny was throwing out some illegal moves. He still kind of held his own. He was still scoring some points, and then Johnny was scoring points.
Yeah, but
and
not
he was
here.
Playing a little dirty and stuff, and then he comes back. But not here. This was way different, and I didn't like it, yeah.
Mike Barnes dominated him the whole time, and then he finally got some focus at the end, was able to flip him over and give him a punch, which good for him. He got a punch in, but it wasn't even that strong of a punch. And it just felt like, okay, he got one punch in and won the whole tournament. Yeah. But what else? So Daniel using his college money to pay for the lease and everything, it was a nice gesture, but it's like, shouldn't you ask your mom about that? Like, she left you with this guy. And and then Miyagi, he puts up a little bit of a fight, but then he's like, okay, thank you. You're my partner. I'm like, Miyagi, shouldn't you ask Daniel's mom before you accept this?
No kidding. Right,
like, mom's going to come back, and Miyagi's like, we started a business.
Yeah, like, she's thinking Daniel's in college right now.
Right.
And in the meantime, they're you know, building up this bonsai,
and according to Cobra Kai, it didn't work out either. I mean, I don't think by the end of this movie we knew that it wasn't going to work out because Miyagi sold his truck to get more trees, but Right. Daniel's wife's giving him trouble about it. The girl, Jessica, I just thought it was another sort of anemic development that she totally friend zones him. That she asks him out, basically, you know, she even says, I came on really strong. But then when he shows up, she's decided that she's going back to her boyfriend and let's just be friends. Okay, that's refreshing. And I think it would be repetitive if Daniel just hooked up with someone new in each movie. And it's like, that doesn't seem to be working out, you know? So I could sort of understand not wanting to repeat that. But what we've seen is Allie blew him off. Kumiko blew him off for a good reason. She got a job with the dance company in Tokyo, but still he's losing girlfriends. And then Jessica hits on him, but then immediately goes back to her boyfriend, who doesn't sound like is that great of a guy. And when I was watching this, I thought, oh yeah, she says that, but they're going to end up falling for each other. And they didn't. And not only did they not, but she doesn't even go to the tournament. Like, you know, I thought, I mean, romance and getting the girl was a big part of the fabric of the first two movies. And so this just makes Daniel feel like a loser. And that was one thing that was so thrilling about the first movie for me, is I identified with him and he got the girl, and that was just a great feeling. And I just felt really sad at the end of this movie when she wasn't even there to be at the tournament for him. And even if they were just friends, like, why not have her go and support him, you know? Like, I don't know. I just thought that was really sad that this was the first fight at the end of the movie where he didn't have any friends there for him except for Miyagi.
Yeah.
But
he won.
Yeah. And just as far as that goes, I think the best thing would have been, instead of to have this girl that they decide to just be friends, maybe just have another guy there with him that's a friend or something that doesn't even seem like it's going to be romantic, you know, just don't even faint in that direction and then psych us out. So I just thought
that's a good point, man. He's got like no friends, no girlfriends.
Yeah.
They all dump him. Maybe everyone figures out he's a poser after a while.
I mean, I think, you know, I have a whole segment on background and, you know, actually they did intend that to be a romantic relationship, but there was a reason why they changed their mind, but they probably just didn't want to rewrite the whole script. And I also want to say, I do think it's a great friendship, and I'm totally on board with having, you know, being friends with the opposite sex. I have several friends who are women. I think that's great. But just the way that it played out in this movie within the context of what's happened in the other movies, it felt like just another way that this movie peters out compared to the other ones.
Yeah. It wasn't well executed.
Terry Silver, I was trying to find out, you know, what was his plan? Like, so first, what is the problem he's trying to solve? I mean, he's grateful to his friend for having saved his life in Vietnam, and his friend lost his karate dojo, which you find out Terry owned. And so he wants to help him get back up on his feet. So how does he do it? Well, he's going to bankroll a new chain of Cobra Kai dojos where Kreese can teach. And I don't know if he was intending on him being a business partner or what. But I'm like, well, Kreese lost all his students because he attacked his students. So that's his problem. So if he has a whole chain of dojos, he's still going to need to get students. That doesn't really solve his problem. And so I don't know. But then what else is Terry going to do? He's going to take revenge on Daniel and Miyagi by forcing Daniel to compete in the tournament and then beating him with his bad boy karate champion. I'm like, well, I guess that, how would that help? I mean, is it all just for the sake of revenge, or does he think that having Cobra Kai come out on top in the tournament will be a good promotion? If so, it's probably not a good idea to use these sleazy like tactics, because that looks bad. In fact, we find out later that Cobra Kai got banned because of it. So it doesn't really make sense. And then there's the whole thing about just trying to make Daniel suffer and by pretending to train him, but really torturing him physically and teaching him to be overly aggressive. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Because you want, you're teaching Mike Barnes to be overly aggressive too. That's the same tactics. I mean, you're actually teaching him how to punch and how to sweep. And he does end up breaking those boards. So he is getting some skills out of it. But I mean, he says, you know, I'm going to he says he's going to be learning pain in every part of his body and fear in every part of his mind. So I think a lot of it is just he's trying to fuck with his head, but I guess it's just being sadistic, but he's still, I don't know. It's just not quite clear what the point of all of it is, except for just being sadistic. You know what I mean? I mean, he is actually training him. So,
yeah.
Not well, though. I mean, I don't think he was doing a very good job. I think he was kind of enjoying, like, when Daniel was trying to kick the boards and it hurt his foot. You know, I think that he was still trying to cause him pain. And maybe Daniel was getting something out of it, but I don't think he thought he was going to get enough to be able to actually beat Mike Barnes in the tournament.
I mean, if you're teaching somebody how to break boards with your foot by doing a sweeping motion, that's what they do in karate. That's what they do. I mean, it's a little flawed. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess they were thick, but man, he freaking did it. So that's like, you know, maybe it was harder than what students normally get, but he actually succeeded. I mean, it was painful, but it's just I guess my point is, when you train like that, it is painful. You know, you do work your body and it's hard, but you are training to punch and kick. And maybe this is more extreme, but it's still in the same vein of what you do. And he did learn some skills and it made him more aggressive, as we saw when he punched that guy at the dance, who, by the way, did push him when his back was turned. So I didn't think it was as out of line as the movie tried to make it seem. I mean, he was just being, that guy at the dance was being a real asshole and then pushed Daniel. And I don't totally blame him for turning around and punching him. Maybe he punched him too hard. So I don't know. It's just, I don't think it's as clear cut as the movie wants it to be that what Terry's actually trying to accomplish here. He's just trying to make him suffer, which kind of makes sense. But within the context of the whole tournament and what he's trying to do exactly for Kreese, I just think it's a bit muddled.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense. Like you said, I had a lot of trouble suspending disbelief with this millionaire businessman sneaking around Miyagi's house. That's kind of like when it dawned on me. Here's a guy who in a couple of previous scenes was doing some big deals. You know, he was in his mansion talking to all these big guys making millions of dollars. And then he's sneaking around this little house. Why? Why does he have so much interest in this old man and stupid kid because of some dumbass tournament in Reseda, California?
And he tells all his assistants and everything, I'm off the grid for a week or the next few weeks.
Yeah.
I'm 100% focused on revenge. And he just happens to be at his dojo, at the Cobra Kai dojo training when Daniel shows up. So he's just like waiting there for Daniel all day long, I guess, because he needs to be a super stalker. Yeah, he needs to be there. And then he counted on Miyagi not training Daniel so that he would be able to step in. But that's a bit of a stretch. You know, how did he know Miyagi wasn't going to train him?
I thought so.
Okay, I got more. The goons were just over the top bad guys. I mean, I did like that they were named Dennis and Snake. Dennis and Snake. And Snake is Terry's son in the movie, which I only found out by reading about it later. That wasn't clear in the movie, but that actor is also the director, John G. Avildsen's son in real life.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know either of those.
When Jessica called Mike Barnes a slime ball, I think that was my biggest cringe moment in the whole movie. Slime ball. Like, I know they don't want to say you fucking asshole, but could they say like douchebag or something?
They had a couple of funny lines. I laughed out loud at the one where she showed up at the door for the date. Or he showed up at the door for the date, and she said, well, I have some news. It might change your mind about going out with me. And he's like, what, do you have poison oak?
Yeah. I mean, there's still little funny moments like that through the whole thing, I would say. Daniel goes to dig up Miyagi's expensive tree and sell it. And Jessica's like, are you sure this is a good idea? Isn't this robbery? And I'm like, yeah. This is a horrible idea. You're trying to help your friend by going and getting his prized possession and selling it without telling him? What the fuck?
Yeah. And then later on, he's like, why am I so stupid? Yeah, and we're like, we don't know.
Good question.
We don't know. Because
you were written that way.
Why are you being so stupid?
And the execution is even worse. Like, they're rappelling down this sheer cliff face, and it's clear neither one of them is any good at it. And Jessica, I think, seemed to kick rocks right in Daniel's face, and he falls, and then he's talking about how precious the tree is, and then she falls and it drops.
Well, I think
Jesus Christ,
all against a blue screen.
That was goofy for sure, but I think she was supposed to have had some experience.
Yeah, but
she
said never that high
qualified, but
but obviously she wasn't any good at it. And then the bad guys come and pull the ropes up, and then he signs the application, and then he goes, pull us up. I'm like, why do you want these guys to pull you up? Just climb up. Because they have control. You're at their mercy.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense. Yeah. And all that burned up a lot of screen time, too.
I know. I know. That's what I remembered about this movie. They're on the side of this cliff. That when Miyagi, you know, Daniel says, can you just teach me how to sweep just that one thing? And I'm like, he's going to hand him a broom. And then it takes at least 30 seconds for them to get around to the joke.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I did also wonder why Miyagi wouldn't train him for the tournament once it's clear that he's being threatened if he doesn't compete. I mean, I understand at first he's like, you know, karate has to mean something. It's not about competing for this plastic medal or whatever. But then once he knows that, hey, these guys are threatening him, at least he could either train him or help him figure out what to do. But he's like, nope, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
After Miyagi fights Kreese and Terry, though, and then they're laughing at him, Daniel says, now will you train me? And he goes, I now, Miyagi, train you. And I'm like, oh, when your ego's on the line, then you'll train him. Like, what's changed?
Right, yeah.
now that they threaten you, you'll train him? Like, I mean, they needed an exciting ending, that's why. But I don't, I mean, Miyagi's, you know, supposed to be all about forgiveness and not fighting. You know, he freaking left his home country so he wouldn't have to fight. So that totally seemed false to me. And yeah, I guess that's about it. I mean, yeah. Just a lot of cringing and feeling underwhelmed and disappointed.
Let me build upon some of that. Let me build upon the Miyagi part, because I got one of my highlights is about Miyagi, who's my favorite character. So I don't think they did him very much justice in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it almost seemed like they were trying to stigmatize Miyagi in some different fashions. You know, in the first movie, he's a pinnacle of wisdom and strength. And in the second movie, even more so, he's elevated to minor god status. But then in this movie, it's like, there's just some scenes that seem to convey that he's learning. It's like he's learning to parent a teenager and all the emotions and frustrations that go with it. But there's also a lot of the inconsistencies of his character. Like you were saying, he was actually the one who suggested that Daniel go into the tournament during the first movie. And now in this movie, he's like, no, tournaments are stupid. I cannot train you.
Well, I mean, he knows that for the first movie, the tournament was an alternative to getting hurt in real life. It was a safer space for him to play out these conflicts. But here, Daniel just wanted to go to the tournament to defend his title. And so then it took on a different context. And Miyagi, understandably, I guess, was like, no, that's not why I teach you karate, to defend this kind of a thing. So then it made some sense to me that he would, in this case, decide not to want to do it. But then it changed, because then he knew that these guys were coming to Daniel and beating the shit out of him and threatening him and almost killing him.
Yeah. And like you said, after he kicks everyone's ass, then he's like, hey, now I train you, you know? Yeah. I don't know. It gave me the feeling that Miyagi was just kind of making all this shit up as he went along. Mm-hmm. In all the movies, it kind of negates some of the stuff I feel like that he did in the previous movies too. So I was a little disappointed in Miyagi's part and the part that he played in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think Karate Kid 3 and even 2 to an extent, this happens a lot with artists. They do more things later on and it kind of makes you reevaluate the earlier work less favorably, you know? like kind of what you're saying with Miyagi. I felt like that a little bit with these movies, but I still love the first one. Rima?
My number two is Daniel's treatment of Mr. Miyagi throughout the film. It was really disappointing to see Daniel. I feel like, you know, I've been critical of Daniel a lot, covering Cobra Kai and talking about the first two movies and calling him a hothead. But this movie really, you know, put that at the forefront. And I thought his attitude in general just really stunk. I thought he was acting like a hormonal teenager, which I guess he is. He's what's supposed to be 18, I guess, in this film.
I mean, it's called 17, 18. I think it's the All Valley Under 18 Karate Tournament. So that means he's 17 at the oldest, if it's still the same.
Okay. Well, I know he's supposed to be starting college. Maybe he's starting at 17, maybe instead of 18. But I mean, still, or I don't know that there's that big of a difference between 17 and 18. And maybe I wasn't paying attention at that age as to what boys were like, but I don't remember the way that they were hopping around. Like you mentioned, Richard, that he's bouncing around on his...
What's with the bunny hop?
I'm like, what is... when he brings Miyagi into that building that he leases, and he's just like bouncing around and look at this and look at that. And I was like, will you please sit down? What is that? You know, he was making me crazy in how quickly he was speaking. And he, you know, when they're going down the side of that cliff or whatever to get that bonsai tree, and when it falls down in the seawater, and just how spastic he was. I don't know. Maybe that's not the best term to use.
That's a great word.
But just, yeah.
Hyper-spastic.
Very hyper. It was very just a big... You know, I thought, this is not Daniel. This is, you know, the Daniel that I've seen in Karate Kid 1 and 2. And then, you know, of course, the present day Daniel that we see in Cobra Kai. This was just terrible. And I thought, I don't know if Ralph Macchio is just, you know, like you said, Jason, is he kind of phoning it in a little bit? Is he just overplaying, you know, Daniel LaRusso? Was he just there for the money?
Or, you know, sometimes when you're in something that you can tell isn't going that well, then you might not feel your best.
Maybe.
Maybe he forgot how to play him.
Maybe. Been a few years. And I've seen, you know, good actors play in not so great roles. And it could just be they're not having their best moment or something. Or maybe it's the writing.
He still knows how to play him right now
it.
In Cobra Kai. So I think...
I think it was just this little mix of... Maybe he wasn't feeling the script, and maybe he was under contract or something, and just he wasn't feeling it, and he just wasn't as serious or as focused or something maybe as he needed to be. I don't know, but it was... I didn't enjoy that, and I didn't enjoy his attitude and his treatment of Mr. Miyagi and how he, you know, he kept lying to him, and he wasn't honest with him, and he was, like, even yelling at him. And I was like, dude, this guy is letting you stay at his house, you know, for free. Your mom... you know, has, you know, is off, you know, taking care of a sick relative. And, you know, he's told you he wants you to go to school, and you turn around and do the complete opposite. And, you know, you talk about how much he means to you, but you're treating him like the complete opposite. And it was just a really just a disappointment, I guess, to see Daniel in this movie for me. It was just like, and then the whole end when he's at the tournament, just what was, I think, worse for me was, you know, he's losing, he's getting his ass kicked, and Miyagi comes over and, you know, he's trying to talk to him and get him focused, and he's, you know, he's like, I'm afraid, and I'm just like, I'm done. I can't even with the end of this. I hope he gets his ass kicked and doesn't even win, because you deserve to get your ass kicked. It was just terrible, and I love that Miyagi was telling him to, you know, it's okay to lose. You know, it's okay to lose to an opponent, but don't let fear, you know, beat you. Yeah. And I thought that was spot on, because I was like, you know, don't, you know, like I said, I'll fight anyone. I'll probably get my ass kicked, but I'm not going to be afraid. You know, just we'll just do it and we'll see what happens. But that just I hated that. I hated that so much. I was like, this is not Daniel.
Maybe Daniel was
afraid.
Maybe he was on drugs.
Well,
maybe
I'll speak up for him a little bit. I mean, he, you know, he started off wanting to do this tournament. Miyagi didn't approve. And to be honest, lots of karate students do tournaments. It's fine. But Miyagi has a certain ideal that's not what his karate's for. It needs to mean something. And Daniel came around. and he burned up the application and he said, okay, you're right, I won't do it. So he sided with his teacher there. And the only time, and then these guys accosted him in Mr. Miyagi's store, and he still said no, even though one guy beat the crap out of him. Miyagi had to come in and save him. So he was still siding with Miyagi at that point. The only time that he went against what Miyagi said was when they threatened their lives and they thought the water was going to come up and drown them. So then he thought, well, to save my life, I'm going to have to do it. He didn't even have to do the tournament after that, because signing an application doesn't mean you're committed. But they said, if you don't do this, we're going to, you won't believe what we're going to do to you. And we're even going to do worse to her. And the other guy's like, yeah, like they're going to gang rape her or something. And so that's when he said, I better do it. And then Miyagi still wouldn't help him. So, I'm just trying to stand up for my boy Daniel here. Like, that's a pretty tough position to be in. So what else are you going to do? So he goes with this other guy to train who will train him. That's pretty reasonable. And then during the tournament, I mean, the guy was...
So it was okay for him to lie to Mr. Miyagi about
it? No, and he felt bad about it. He's like, what am I doing here? You know, he's in a tough position. And no, it wasn't okay. But I mean, I just... think that the whole point of the movie is he was struggling and he lost his way a little bit, but it's sort of, you know, when you kind of think mm-hmm. through what happened, I could understand like not knowing what to do. Hey, these guys threatened my life. This guy that I can usually count on won't train me. I guess I'm going to go to somebody else. Then he goes to this other guy and the guy's like, he's making me punch these boards. I'm not so sure, but you know, I'm in a really tough spot. Miyagi won't train me. I guess I'll keep going. And so I can sort of understand it. And then at the end, when he's at the tournament, that guy was kicking him over and over again. You know, it's like, I can imagine if I got kicked over and over again in the stomach and in the head, I might be like, I don't think I want to do this anymore, you know? And that's what Miyagi's there for, to kind of bolster him. And
in reality, you wouldn't be able to keep going because you'd be hurt.
So I get it. But it was... He was yelling at Miyagi a lot and just being really aggressive towards him. So I understand what you're saying, but I just wanted to stand up for him a little bit.
He broke his tree too.
Right. That was the worst.
Yeah. What a jerk.
Yeah, that was the part that I thought was the lamest of all the things that Daniel did. Was go get his $10,000 tree without asking him, and he was going to sell it. That's like if you came home and your friend sold your car. Guess what? I sold your car. Here's the money.
How would anyone else know that tree was worth $10,000? I mean, how do you?
Really?
That's the part I don't think I understood. Was okay. I understand that this is supposed to be something valuable, but how do you just pull up a bonsai tree growing out in the wild like that Mr. Miyagi planted, and you know, oh, this is a $10,000 bonsai tree. Give me $10,000.
Yeah. Maybe it's based on age or something like that.
I presume it's the people who know like anything, you know, how does somebody know a painting's worth $1 million?
It's only worth what someone will pay for it.
I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'm not educated on bonsai trees and how you look at that one and go, yes, you're right. That one's a $10,000 bonsai tree.
I couldn't tell if that's a real thing. I looked up bonsai and I have some more information about that later, but I don't know if there's actually the kind of bonsai that you don't have to train and they just grow like that themselves. So mm-hmm. It might just be one of the things that the Karate Kid series made up, or it might be new and real and I just couldn't find it. But yeah, anyway, do you have any more stuff about Daniel or your number two?
No, I don't.
Okay. I'll go into what I liked. So I think that Terry Silver is super goofy and over the top as a villain. But if I throw up my hands and don't worry about it and don't, you know, expect or hope that this movie's going to be as good as the other two, I thought he was actually really fun to watch. And part of the reason why I was interested in watching the movie, I mean, he's such an over the top bad guy. He laughs evilly. He kicks the shit out of his underlings for sport. He's president of Dynatox Industries and loves to dump nuclear waste.
Right.
He says 10 years ago, nuclear waste was the preferred waste. You could dump it anywhere. Now everybody's a detective. He wants to dump chloride sludge in Borneo. who in Borneo knows what chloride sludge is?
Right.
He's got butlers and assistants with English accents, like he's in Downton Abbey or something. Very well, right. So.
They have to have an English accent.
Yeah. I mean, if you put a rich guy in a movie right now, he wouldn't be like the kind of rich that they're showing here, where he's taking bubble baths and making business calls and he's
right.
driven around in his Rolls and wearing his ascot and everything.
That was an 80s just, thing.
Yeah, it's funny. He's bribing grand juries. I mean, this is awful, but he repeatedly calls Miyagi a slope, which is a racial slur
mm-hmm.
for Asians. That's
yeah.
the part that I kept wincing at. I really liked the violin music that played during Terry Silver scenes. I don't remember ever noticing that before. The score, again, was composed by Bill Conti, just like the first two movies, and also, I think, Rocky. And so I have some clips of that. Here's when Kreese first enters Terry Silver's mansion, when we first see Terry.
Ah, Mr. Kreese, good morning. What a surprise. Some coffee.
Where's the boss?
He's upstairs.
Thanks.
What's up?
So it goes on like that, but every time there's a Terry scene, they start playing that like that. And it's just so like, wow, this movie doesn't deserve that much artfulness for this kind of music, but I loved it. And it also felt like, I feel like this is the Evil Universe reflection of the original Karate Kid movie in a lot of ways. And with this music too, because like, here's music that you hear with Daniel sometimes. Ooh. You know, we've played that before, but
happy.
It's almost, yeah, but it's got a similar quickness to it and artistry, but more happy and less like, I don't know. It's not really ominous, the Terry Silver, but it does feel like dominating or something.
Yeah.
And then, like you mentioned, Rich, he's so like, he's just his delivery. What did you say about his, when the director was like, cut, let's go to lunch?
No, he's just overacting the whole thing.
Yeah. So here's like, he's so excited to be taking revenge. And I actually, this time watching it, actually kind of found it infectious. So here's one, like the biggest one of those, I think.
Hey, anything else you want?
Yeah. Make his knuckles bleed.
Hey, I like that. Oh, I like that, Johnny. I'm going to use that.
Right, exactly.
Oh, man.
He was really hamming it up there.
Yeah. And I don't know, man. I don't blame you, Rima, for just like not digging that at all, but for some reason this watch through I was totally into it. I was like, man, this guy's the only thing saving this for me.
He was interesting. I mean, he was so over the top and like just, but at the same time it was definitely interesting and worth the watch for sure.
It's cheese ball, but if I'm appreciating it on that level, then I was like, yeah, man. And just the look on his face, like whenever he'd go around the corner and wait for to see if Daniel would keep punching the wood and then Daniel would punch it, he'd just be like,
yeah, like a
like,
Scooby-Doo villain, dude, or something.
How did you become a millionaire?
Right. What else did I like? I remember being glad that they were back in LA. I loved going to Okinawa for two, but just coming back, I felt like that was cool to be back in the old stomping grounds. I like the themes. I mean, I noticed more this watch through. It's all about finding the inner strength and to persevere and to grow. And if you have adversity, which is symbolized by this tree being broken in half, that mirrors Daniel losing his way. And then Miyagi tapes the tree back together and says, if it has strong roots, then it should heal. And he says the same thing to Daniel. You know, it's like, Daniel's like, oh, the tree, it's healing. He feels so relieved. And Miyagi's like, because have strong root, just like you, Daniel-san, inside you have strong root, no need nothing except what inside you to grow, understand. And he goes, yeah, I do understand. And that's right. When he decides to go to Terry and call off his relationship with him, you know, he means well, but I'm just not digging what's going on here. And that really got me, just like moments in the first two movies, that relationship where Miyagi helped Daniel realize something and Daniel really took it to heart. And I think it is a good message. And later, as they're replanting the tree on the cliffside, Miyagi and Daniel, and Miyagi kind of reinforces the message, you know, this tree is choosing how it grows. Now you must choose how you grow. Miyagi, have great faith in you. I mean, I just like that message. And as a parent, I really, really like that. So that got me. That was good. The guest house, we see the inside of it. I liked that. I mean, lucky kid to have this sort of Zen place to live. So I like the environments, and I like the shop. Miyagi's shop was, even though it was kind of on the wrong side of the tracks and everything, it looked like a quaint place.
Yeah.
I like that Miyagi. Nice. I mean, Miyagi, just like in the other two movies, he breaks in on these young people threatening Daniel and he fights them. And I'm like, here he goes, fighting more kids. But Miyagi finally gets to fight an adult. And two of them, he fights Kreese and Terry Silver. And I like that. And I like that he never even got hit once. And I mean, the choreography maybe could have been a little better, but I thought it was pretty damn good. I don't know. What'd you guys think of that fight?
That was my number one highlight.
Mine as well.
Yeah. Okay. I won't talk about it anymore. I thought there were funny moments. One I liked when, you know, right after Mike Barnes and his two guys, Dennis and Snake, came in and started threatening Daniel and fighting him and everything. And Daniel's all upset in the car with Miyagi later, and Miyagi just starts singing. And he's like, I can't believe you're singing. You know, what are we going to do? And Miyagi's like, da, 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 da. And he's got the smile on his face. I don't know. I just think it's funny how their relationship is. Sometimes Miyagi can be really serious and Daniel's goofing around. And this time it was the reverse.
I like that. I like when he said, when Daniel was like, how can you eat at a time like this? And Miyagi's like, sometimes being bothered on full stomach better than empty one. And I was like, yeah. Actually, I really do agree with that, but it's also absolutely probably why I'm overweight too.
Well, there's nothing worse than being hangry, so yeah. I agree.
Right. Like I was saying, I feel like it's the evil universe version of the first movie, like Terry training Daniel in ways that are on the surface supposed to make him stronger, but are actually intended to mess with his head. Are kind of a twist on the first movie where Miyagi trained Daniel in ways that looked like nothing or doing chores, but actually are teaching him useful karate skills. So it's kind of the inverse. And I like that, you know, Daniel became a member of the Cobra Kai kind of, he wears a Cobra Kai gi and he's training in the same dojo that he first saw Johnny trained in the first movie. And when Terry mentioned you got to have desire, devotion, and discipline, I'm like, that is how you accomplish great things. You know, you want something and then you commit to it and you see it through. But it's also how you get indoctrinated in bad things sometimes when the teachers talk to you that way. Like, if you really want this, you're going to have to, don't ask me any questions. In fact, it totally reminded me of when Miyagi told Daniel, you know, walk on left side road safe, right side road safe, walk in middle, squish just like grape, and you do what I say, no question. It was just like a similar echo of that scene, but just the difference is you need to have a good teacher or else you're committing to something bad. And then, oh yeah, and just another funny thing when Miyagi brought out the hot water with whatever fizzy stuff was in there and stuck Daniel's foot in there, and he goes, ow, it's hot. And he's just like, ah, dot, 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 and pulls it back in there. I just like when he does stuff like that.
Yeah, there was a lot of scenes like that that I kind of see. I thought it was more kind of like them showing him, you know, like trying to raise Daniel. Like, yeah, like all parents and all the different frustrations and emotions that go along with it.
Absolutely. Yeah, very much so, where you have to decide how much to interfere and how much to let them take care of it themselves.
Yeah.
And you have to sort of gently nudge them in different directions and stuff like that. I mean, you guys know about that more than I do since you have older kids.
Yeah. Well, like you were saying, Rima, like, you know, Daniel, he kept throwing fits and running around treating Miyagi like crap. That's pretty much what teenagers do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, mine didn't, but I guess, yeah, it depends on the kid and the personality. And of course, I know Daniel was under extreme circumstances, definitely in a tough spot, you know, for sure.
But it's hard to watch. Well,
it was really hard to watch. Yeah. And, you know, I felt really bad for him, for sure. But I was like, dude, Miyagi's always had your back. You know, if that's the one person that I was just really disappointed in that
he kind of didn't. That's where I see the problem. Like, I think he kind of knew that those guys were threatening Daniel. I mean, he stepped in and saved him from them beating him up at the shop that night and then started singing, like I was saying. And Daniel's like, what are we going to do? No, 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 which I thought was funny. But then he didn't offer him any solutions.
Yeah, that was confusing.
He didn't have his back there. I don't feel like. I don't know if that was what the writers intended, but.
Well, I just meant Daniel didn't really have Miyagi.
No, yeah. All right. Number one. Yeah, number one, Richard. Yeah.
Number one highlight was Miyagi kicking everyone's ass. He kicked the three kids' ass. He kicked all the three adults' ass. And I'm just gonna leave it at that because I don't want to break it down and be disappointed. He dispatched.
You don't want to dislike it too much.
Yeah, he dispatched Barnes really quick. Just ran him into a wall, knocked him out. Then he took care of Kreese, and then the fight with Terry was pretty satisfying. I have to admit, I was like, "Yeah, kick his butt!" And he did the funny little wah wah at the end.
Oh, that was so good.
And then the over the top, the hamming it up part, you know, where they're just yelling at him as he's leaving. Doing that stupid laugh. Like,
oh, and I was like, you just dude, got your ass just got your kicked. Ass kicked.
Yeah. Right.
You're dumb.
I know. You're losers. I don't think Miyagi got hit once, which I think is pretty cool.
No. You know what would have been a good movie is if, like, this movie should have been like Miyagi, out of a job, decides to go balls in, and teach Daniel all of his secrets, and then enters him into all the tournaments, eventually turning professional, making lots of money, and then rising all the way to the top. Best of the best karate competition in Long Beach, California, man. That would have been awesome.
You should have written the screenplay for that.
Yeah, I mean, the best parts are when they're fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And winning.
Except for the tournament in this one. That was done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the fights a lot, but I thought I wasn't sure I believed that Terry Silver would give up so easily just because he got thrown into a mirror and paint spilled on his head. He didn't really look like he was that hurt.
No. Yeah, and that's another issue, too. I actually have that in a note right there. It says he only defeats them. Miyagi only defeats them. Which isn't enough. He should have broken some bones.
Incapacitate him.
Yeah, he needs to tear up some ligaments, man.
Poke their eyes out.
Bring those assholes down a notch.
Rip their balls off and show it to them.
Before they scream.
Daniel's like, teach me that move.
Going like full Mortal Kombat here. I like it. Finish him.
He's like, Daniel, pick the grapes. Pick the grapes. God. Why am I picking your grapes? You'll see. Anyway, Rima?
Well, my number one was also Miyagi kicking some ass. I love seeing Miyagi be a badass, even if he's having to fight kids and teenagers. But I thought that was, you know, a super great move when he tosses Mike Barnes through the doors. I mean, that dude was flying in the air, legit, yeah. Like falling through the air, and I was like, whoa, you know, because I didn't know. This was my first watch, so I didn't know. I was like, was that Daniel? No, that was Miyagi. So, you know, super cool to really unleash. And I think I kind of expected that somewhere in there. I know it was brought up sometime while we were covering either one of the movies or in Cobra Kai that, you know, we get to see Miyagi fight, you know, and it was, you know, pretty good fight, and it that did not let me down. So this was definitely a highlight for me, was getting to see Miyagi. And I loved, you know, like you said, Rich, when he mocks Terry there, you know, at the end. I thought that was a very fitting Miyagi thing to do, you know, kind of like when he did like the nose honk to Kreese in Karate Kid 2.
Right.
You know, this was a little way to, you know, I'm like, you know, and then, yeah, when they're mocking them, when they're walking, I'm like, dude, you just got your ass kicked by like a 60-year-old man, you know, shut up, you know, you just got your ass handed to you. And I don't know how big this Terry Silver guy is, but when the camera kind of goes back a little bit and you can see Miyagi and Terry Silver fighting, it reminded me of like watching Bruce Lee and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh, right.
It's like that dude was huge compared to Pat Morita, but it was really great. Mm.
Yeah, that was the highlight.
Yeah,
Miyagi.
That's what, when William Zabka auditioned for the part, he got up in the director's face, John G. Avildsen, and delivered some of his lines, and he grabbed him by the lapel, I guess, and then he when it was over, he took off his bandana. You know, sorry about that, I'm just acting. And the guy's like, so what's your, you know, how tall are you? You're a little taller than my guy. And William Zabka was like, yeah, well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was taller than Bruce Lee. And he goes, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So we got the part.
Right on.
Okay, my turn?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, some background stuff. So this movie has can you guess the Rotten Tomato score?
Oh. 17%.
5.
Remo wins. It's 15.
15. Oh.
Pretty close. So part two has 45 and the original has 88. And the next Karate Kid, which is the fourth movie, which we won't be covering, and it has Hilary Swank, has 8%.
Oh my goodness.
Even worse. Did you ever see that, Rich?
No, I'm afraid to.
Don't watch it.
I didn't even know there was a fourth one until we started doing this Cobra Kai thing, and I just ran across it online. I was like, what?
I dragged Eric to it, and then he would never let me forget it. He just kept making fun of me. In 2015, the director, John G. Avildsen, called the film, quote, a poor imitation of the first one and a horrible movie.
No, wow.
So even he's, and then the screenwriter, I read this on Reddit. I don't know if it's true, but it feels right. It said, Robert Mark Kamen was burnt out on the series after Karate Kid 2. When Columbia told them they would make a Karate Kid 3 with him or without him, he pitched them a fantasy story where Daniel's hit on the head and wakes up in 1625 and encounters Miyagi's ancestor in ancient China, developing an alternate version of Kung Fu that becomes the Miyagi version of karate. Columbia Pictures said they wanted a more modern day movie and asked Kamen to write one. Kamen named an absurd figure that he was sure Columbia wouldn't pay so as to get out of doing the movie. Columbia paid up. Kamen hacked out Karate Kid 3 and is so ashamed of it that he wouldn't return for Karate Kid 4.
There you go.
Yep.
Ashamed all the way to the bank.
He also specified that he wanted Miyagi's ancestor and Daniel to encounter flying monkey people and other mythical creatures in the movie.
What the hell?
Wow.
Did he go crazy or something?
He was really, really trying to get out of it, wasn't he?
I know. I know. It's funny. By the way, I saw a picture of him, Robert Mark Kamen, on Twitter with the three Cobra Kai showrunners, and they said he was a fan of it, so I guess he's watched Cobra Kai, and he told them he liked it.
No, that's cool.
Good.
That's cool. John Kreese was initially intended to have a larger role in the film, but due to Martin Cove's filming schedule conflicts with Hard Time on Planet Earth, the character of Terry Silver was written into the script, which makes me wonder if the original idea was for Daniel to train with Kreese. That seems like it would be a stretch for him to ever want to do that. But anyway, I did think it was kind of lame that Kreese was only in it a little bit and he got sent off to Tahiti, and it just made him seem kind of weak that someone else needed to help him, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Ralph Macchio's character, this is according to IMDb, was supposed to have a romantic relationship with the character of Jessica, played by Robin Lively, who's Blake Lively's older sister, by the way. But he asked to have their relationship be platonic because he didn't want his wife to be jealous. In addition, the age difference was uncomfortable for all involved because Macchio was 27 and Lively was just 16.
Oh.
Ooh. That's pretty young.
So I'm like, well, maybe they should have planned that better, you know? I mean, I don't know. It sounds like Ralph Macchio, like, what, on the first day of filming, oh, you know what? My wife's going to be jealous, so we're just going to have to be friends. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That would really throw a wrench in things.
It would be awkward, too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I wish that the scriptwriter would have known that, so they could have not written it as if it was going to be a relationship and then psyched us out. Bonsai. I always thought that a bonsai was a particular like species of plant, like, you know, an oak tree, a apple tree, a bonsai tree or something.
Yeah.
But it's not. The definition is an ornamental tree or shrub grown in a pot and artificially prevented from reaching its normal size, or the art of growing ornamental artificially dwarfed trees or shrubs. So they can be anything. They can be apple bonsai, azalea, cypress, bamboo, willow. I looked them up and I saw just different versions of miniatures of all those trees as bonsai. It's kind of cool.
Is it like a breeding thing, or do they make them miniature
as they're growing? Know. Right. I feel like you can't just like cut off a branch and say it's a bonsai. It has to be something in the growing.
Yeah.
But I have no idea. Huh. But like I said, I don't know if there's really such a thing as a, like they say in the movie, true bonsai that doesn't need pruning or care, and as Miyagi says, chooses its own way to grow, or if they just made that up for the movie. I have a feeling they just made it up, but I don't really know. The place where they planted that bonsai, called Devil's Cauldron, if IMDb is right, that was filmed at Devil's Basin, which is off the Pacific Coast Highway in Elk, California. It's like 3 hours north of me, up on the way to Fort Bragg, where my aunt lives. And we actually went there a few years ago, and I remember seeing something like that. And I think it was that, but anyway, that would make it
there, an hour man.
Drive from LA, which I think is why they changed the name, so people wouldn't think it was that far away from Daniel.
You were there and didn't even know it.
Last thing I have here is that Sean Kanan beat out 2,000 other martial arts hopefuls for the part of Mike Barnes. He answered an open casting call, and yeah, he was called back for a screen test with Ralph Macchio, and he said, I wanted them to remember me, so I backed Macchio into a corner and wouldn't let up.
Nice.
Beat the shit out of him.
Lie, cheat, and steal to get that part.
Yeah. So that's all I got.
Those were good.
Got any notes, Richard?
Yeah, did you hear at the tournament, somebody in the background yells out, use the crane, Danny boy! The callback to the first movie, right? And what was that magic green stuff that they used on Daniel's joints, man? I need some of that stuff. They never showed what it was, right?
Soaked my body in that and just immersed myself in that.
I think, yeah, Miyagi said, better you not know, or something like that.
Oh, right. I thought it was, I don't know how to feel about a lot of the stuff in this movie, but the scene where Daniel was showing his girlfriend, how to do, how Miyagi teaches karate. And so he's like, you know how when you make a pot and you do this? And she's like, oh yeah, yeah. And he says, now watch. And he's like, going to punch her or something. And she blocks it. She's like, oh, I see, totally. And I was like, what?
I know karate now.
Yeah. 15-second karate lesson from pottery sculpting.
He was just showing her how Miyagi teaches him using everyday, you know, activities.
Yeah,
wax
but
on, wax off.
It was too fast. A lot of the stuff in this movie, I understand why they were doing it. And it, I mean, none of it was really horrible. It just, I felt like a lot of it just wasn't executed well. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I had a question, but I think we answered it, right? Do martial art tournaments have the defending champion only fight in the final match, or is that something they made up?
I doubt it.
Seems pretty shady.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've not been to that many. I haven't competed any and haven't been to that many, so I don't know. But I don't know. Feels like that title wasn't quite earned that second time around for Daniel.
I'm guessing they just did that because they didn't want to have to show Daniel fighting his way through the tournament because, you know, it would have ruined the pacing and been repetitive and all that.
Yeah.
It was already a 2-hour movie.
Right.
Without that.
Yeah, it was a long movie.
Yeah, most of my questions come from the end at the tournament. I think by that time I was starting to question everything about the movie.
Everything.
Yeah. I was like, how long are you allowed to lay on the mat? Jesus Christ, yeah, he was laying there for like 2 minutes. Get up. Yeah, that's it. That's all the notes I had.
I love it.
Get your ass back in there and fight, you little...
Get in there, get your ass whipped and just let it be done already.
Why did I come here? That's funny if Miyagi was like, I go home.
Does not look good.
No little Miyagi.
Does not look good for Miyagi.
Embarrassing me.
I go back to Okinawa. I mean, I wish he you know, when Daniel said, oh, what are you going to do? You got fired. And he's like, yeah, and I used all my money to buy Yukie a house, which I'm like, what about Sato? But anyway, he could have went back to Okinawa. Apparently he has a place there and a woman who would love him to stay there. But man, it's kind of crazy that suddenly he has absolutely zero money to the point where
he doesn't have any money to fly back.
College tuition will save him.
Yeah. And he's selling his cars.
Yep. And that's another thing. He sold that truck. And then we saw that truck in Cobra Kai, but I guess you could explain that just by saying that he went back and bought it back once he made enough money.
Oh, yeah, that's right, huh? Mm-hmm. Did not make that connection.
Rima?
I had a couple. So one continuity issue that I had there at the end of the tournament when they announced that Daniel was the first person to win 2 years in a row. If I'm remembering correctly, Johnny was also a 2-time champion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Johnny won in 82 and 83, and then was defeated by Daniel in 84. And then, of course, Daniel won again the next year. So
what happened to your senior year? Shut up.
So I thought, well, I didn't like that, especially since, you know, the same writers are in here. And I thought, you know, that was... Because I thought they mentioned it in Karate Kid 1. I'm trying to think if it was mentioned there, but I know I'm almost positive it was mentioned in the movie and not just in Cobra Kai, you know, that he was a 2-time champion. So I was like, come on, that kind of bugged me.
I'm not sure if it was, but it definitely wasn't Cobra Kai, which could just be a mistake on the Cobra Kai writer's part, or they're, you know, sometimes they just want to ignore something that's just a little detail because it's better for Cobra Kai to have that. Like, same thing with the truck, you know, it's like, and it's an iconic thing and nobody remembers Karate Kid 3, so just put it in there.
Right.
Another one was a line when Daniel and Jessica were dancing, which I never want to see that ever again. But whenever they stop, she's like, I'm so thirsty, I need to get something to drink, and he's like, yeah, I can drink a horse.
Whoa, what? But,
it's supposed to be, yeah, cute. It's a play on I could eat a horse. Dumb joke. Yeah, I thought it was dumb too.
That was terrible. Even for a dumb joke, that was just so
bad. That scene was so 80s.
Yeah.
With the way they were all dressed and the singers and everything.
And then definitely an 89 band for
that
sure.
That dude got punched in the face and then Terry never paid him. That dude got a raw deal.
He's an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That's all the notes that I have that
I
we
just remembered
talked
that
about.
Too. You know, I just also remembered there's some cheesy editing. Did you guys catch some of that editing? Like scenes cut short, and then when the punks showed up the second time at Mike and Mike Barnes beats up Daniel, like Miyagi appears and flips, I think it was Snake, farther into the shop and then kick Barnes out the front door. But then there's Snake and Dennis already in the Mustang. And it's like, hey, boy, they sure got there fast.
He slithered over there.
Yeah. There's a couple of other scenes, too, where they just kind of ended and went right into another one that kind of unrelated. I was like, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
I got a few. There's some Cobra Kai connections. If you haven't seen Cobra Kai and you don't want any spoilers, maybe you should just skip ahead. But just some little things. Pretty little. I already mentioned, yeah, Kreese was down and out because of Daniel and Miyagi and that, and really himself. But that kind of mirrored Johnny in Cobra Kai. Terry, when he's dropping Kreese off at the airport, trying to cheer him up, he's like, come on, say it, Cobra Kai. And Kreese goes, never dies. And I think that's the only time that's ever been said in the movies, but we hear it in the series a lot. You know, Johnny and Miguel say it to each other, Cobra Kai never dies. Daniel, more Cobra Kai connections. Daniel's really entrepreneurial, finding the location and getting the lease and everything for the bonsai shop, and has all these ideas about how to fix it up and where everything should go. And, you know, I think that fits really well with him having his own car dealership later. He's just an entrepreneurial kind of guy. This is the first time there's a fake out on Kreese's death. And then we get another one of those at the end of Cobra Kai season one. I mentioned already, Daniel told his daughter Samantha he joined Cobra Kai once and not proud of it. So here we see that. Let's see. Oh, when you know, Daniel gets cornered by Terry and Mike Barnes in the Cobra Kai dojo when he went to break up with Terry, and Terry revealed that he's really a bad guy. And then Daniel starts to leave and Kreese jumps out. Arr!
Yeah.
I mean, it's silly, but I remember being like, oh shit. And when, you know, Daniel finds out in Cobra Kai that Robbie is Johnny's son and he's like, what is this? Is this some kind of a, you know, scam? That's what that reminded me of. I think he has PTSD from that. So now he's like less trusting.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I was mentioned earlier, you know, and as much crap as I give this movie, I was grateful to have watched it. And now I have that background. And so I feel like I understand a little bit better about where that's coming from. So now I feel like I can, you know, understand Daniel a little bit better, and maybe I'll give him a little bit of slack, you know, but I mean, I like it because it helps me understand a little bit better. And I think it makes total sense, because I felt really bad for him. As terrible as what this, I thought the movie was, as far as the writing and stuff and some of the direction, you know, I did feel really bad for him, because like, that's a really shit thing to do that they were doing.
Yeah.
Messed
him up.
So yeah, I thought that was bad. So
that particular scene actually just made me laugh, because he jumped out going, arr! But he jumped out from behind a life-size cutout of him going, arr!
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Someone sold, apparently, the South Seas apartment complex where, you know, Daniel and his mom used to live. And I guess they're renovating. The old woman, Mrs. Milo, who has a relative named Louie, she just says, it's progress, kind of sarcastically. Yeah. So it seems like they're renovating, but either way, apparently for some reason, that means Miyagi's out of a job. But then Daniel and Johnny go there in Cobra Kai, and it doesn't look all that different. I mean, it doesn't look like there's been any major renovation, so I feel like that's a continuity thing. And we see Uncle Louie, who is the terrible cousin Louie's dad from Cobra Kai. Mm-hmm. He's sick in bed with Daniel's mom.
Ringing the bell.
What else? In Cobra Kai, they mentioned, you know, when Johnny tries to get reinstated for the tournament, and they say that Cobra Kai was banned from the tournament. I didn't go back and look at the details of what they said, but I know they mentioned Terry Silver, and Johnny's like, I don't even know who that is. But apparently, you know, they decided the way that Mike Barnes fought, they mentioned Mike Barnes too, the way he fought was so dirty, and maybe 2 years in a row, because the year before that, the Cobra Kai guys were kept, you know, doing illegal moves and stuff, that was enough. But it was interesting because in this movie, I didn't remember this, but Terry apparently bought this facility and donated it to the tournament. That's the announcement that they made.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess if you kind of stick all that together, Terry Silver bought the facility, donated it to the tournament. And then because Mike Barnes fought dirty, they still like banned Cobra Kai forever. That seems pretty unlikely, but I guess that's what happened. And, I got two more notes. After Daniel won, Kreese is like turning and facing the audience who are all cheering, and he's going, and he looks like he's going to backhand someone in the audience. Like he raises his hand up.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Dude's got problems.
And then last, I think it would have been good to have Johnny in this movie in some aspect, whether it was a rematch between the two of them or Johnny had become Daniel's friend. Maybe that would have been good instead of Jessica, that Johnny and Daniel could have hung out. I don't know.
But would we have Cobra Kai?
Oh, yeah, no, then we probably wouldn't have Cobra Kai, so never mind. Good point. That's all I got. Man, we spent just as much time on that as we did on Karate Kid 2.
I think you did.
Right. Yeah. I did.
Train wrecks are fun.
All right, we'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. We're digging through the couch of cash. We're taking cuts because both our calls are trash. All right, let's get into some listener feedback. Rich?
Mary Kay Bader Venkman Owens writes, "My boyfriend insists this is a good movie. You should see the things I can't get him to watch. I just... ...
Yep.
He owes you one, is all I can say. Dabalino Bob Grippy says, "Personally, I think Terry Silver as a villain is comic booky in a good way. This film has cheesy all over it. Acid washed pants, bad spiked hair, and Snake, the director's son. If only their red convertible was hit by the oncoming train. That poor guy in the club that Terry said he'd pay after, he flirts with a girl and then gets his nose broken. He's like the dude with glasses that gets killed in the crossfire of the T-1000 and Arnold, innocent bystander." I remember that, by the way. Yeah, totally got wiped out. He was in the wrong place, wrong time. He goes on, "The highlights I constantly rewatch is Miyagi versus all three villains. Heck, I might even teach for free. LOL."
I like that. Pete Ilani Requiro says, "The actor who plays Dennis trained under my sensei. He's a legit karate instructor, and he led the panel when I tested for my black belt. Karate Kid 3 is pretty cheesy. Terry Silver is a comic book character villain, but I love watching the scene where Dennis destroys the shoji screen. We crack up every time."
That's right, yeah. Watch That's me tear cool. up this paper! Yeah.
Apparently that guy made a YouTube video that was kind of a parody of that, where he like fights more shoji screens.
That's funny.
Great. Alicia Stout writes, "So I had never seen this movie. In fact, I never knew there was a Karate Kid 3. I watched it a month or so ago when they came out on Netflix. Terry Silver was super cheeseball, but what killed it for me was trying to retrieve the last living bonsai tree off that cliff and preserving it before it died. Oy, yeah, there's 2 hours of my life I won't get back." Well, worth the 15% it got on the tomato meter.
Oh, I'm sorry. We warned you. We warned you it was bad.
Yes, there was warning, and I still watched. I don't know. It was bad, but it was still kind of like a good bad in a way.
It was for me.
Yeah. Damien Vital says, "Watched it a few days ago, and I didn't hate it as much as I remembered. There's much more action than the second installment, and I really enjoyed going back to things we saw in the first movie, like Mr. Miyagi's house, Daniel's yellow classic car, and the return to the Cobra Kai dojo. Now the bad. The plot was awful. The acting was cheesy and over the top. essentially Terry Silver with his cigar smoking an evil laugh in the back of his chauffeured car, and Danielle became Daniel. Sorry, not Danielle. Daniel.
That's what Dutch calls him.
Hey, Danielle.
Oh. And Daniel became more and more annoying throughout. There is probably more, but I'm sure you will cover everything. Overall, 2 out of 5 kicks to the groin.
I'd give it 4 out of 5 kicks to the groin.
That's awesome. Kicks to the groin.
The more kicks to the groin, the worse. All right. We got one call from Mr. Steve Brown.
Hello, House Podcastica. This is Steve, and this is for The Karate Kid Part 3. And, you know, I really wanted to say that it wasn't as bad as I remembered it, but yeah, it's still pretty bad. Where do you start? I mean, I'll give it, these are still at least 2 really great actors in Pat Morita and Ralph Macchio. I think they still played these parts really well. They played what was written. It was rough to watch it again because I could remember a lot of it. I do remember back in the day, this was our introduction to Thomas Ian Griffith. He went on a run to do several action movies there in the early 90s. And he's still kind of around today. He pops up every once in a while, but he hasn't done a lot. The beginning... It starts on such a down note with you finding out that Kumiko has gone to this Japanese dance school, the apartment complex is being torn down or renovated or whatever, Mr. Miyagi's lost his job, Daniel's mom is gone tending to Uncle Louie, and so it just kind of, and then Daniel just makes one bad decision after another, and it, so, yeah, and then, we get to that point where it was great. I will say this, and I think you guys mentioned this before when you talked about the movie. It was kind of cool to see Pat Morita in that fight scene between him and Martin Cove and Thomas Ian Griffith, where he's basically dodging and then using their own momentum against him. And he did do some really cool moves, though, in there. I don't know if that was Pat Morita, if they had a stunt double in there for him. But there were some cool moves he had in that fight, especially against Martin Cove. But, and then it ends kind of the same way we've seen them all win. And there was a comment, and I thought... They said that this is the first time anyone has won 2 times in a row. And I thought that they had said Johnny was like a 2 or 3 time champion. But maybe I misunderstood that. Anyway, can't wait to hear how you guys are going to do this one. And can't wait for Cobra Kai. Talk to you later.
Did you guys see a show called Duet back in the 90s on Fox sitcom?
Duet. It sounds familiar.
It sounds familiar, but I think it was
about this couple. It was a romance, and Mary Page Keller was the woman. Mm-hmm. She's Thomas Ian Griffith's wife.
Oh.
Huh.
Married her. I think they both were in soaps together.
Okay.
He ended up doing like Another World or something.
Okay.
I wonder if he like talked like this the whole time. Yeah!
Super, he'd make a good doctor that way, huh?
Right.
You have cancer!
Suture stat! So Steve, I haven't mentioned this before, but Steve has a podcast. I thought it would be nice to mention it. Him and Mark, they do Panels to Pixels, and they cover, adaptations of things that are in comics mostly, like they did The Boys, which is an awesome series, and season 2 is coming up here.
Yeah.
And, they're one of the like 10 podcasts I know of covering Umbrella Chronicles right now.
Umbrella Academy.
Is that what it's called? Umbrella Academy. Uh-huh. There's a game called Umbrella Chronicles. But anyways, if you want to hear more Steve, I would suggest checking out Panels to Pixels.
Yeah, he's great. He co-hosted on an episode of Strange Indeed with me not so long ago. So that was fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Steve will like it better after listening to this podcast.
Or worse.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. Sorry, but
No, this was still fun.
Yeah, I'm curious if anyone like, if you watched this because of this podcast and how you felt about it, and also if you really liked the movie.
All that email to Jason.
Now you're upset at us for dogging on it so hard.
Did you like it?
I did find
it a
little
magic. More, or do you like it worse? Yeah. No.
If you want to write in about that or anything else, or record a message and send it in, you can email it to us at waxonwaxoff@podcastica.com.
We also put up a post for each week's episode on our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And be sure to check out the other great podcasts at podcastica.com.
Next episode of this podcast, Cobra Kai. So we're returning to our coverage of season 2 because it will be out on Netflix. And we'll probably, you know, we already recorded our episode actually about a month ago for Cobra Kai season 2, episodes 1 and 2, Mercy Part 2, and Back in Black. I will probably publish that on the day that it comes out on Netflix, which is the 28th. And then we'll resume our episode by episode coverage the next Wednesday after that. Well, you know, the next week after that. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Hey, I like that, Rima. I'm going to use that.